You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Coming up to 7 minutes past 12 o'clock. Good afternoon from me, Ray White, in for Stephen Crotus on the Midday Report. Well, coming up on the program this afternoon, looking at a series of reports of another possible cabinet reshuffle. The Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital in Johannesburg is battling to survive just 9 months after its launch. We find out why this is. A meeting to try and resolve tensions between Uber and Meter taxi drivers underway in Sandton. And here's a question for you. What did you think of the rugby? While Bafana Bafana are battling at the moment, the Springboks did well okay at the weekend, I think. But I'd like to hear from you on these and other stories. You can SMS on 31702 or 31567 or tweet on @RayWhiteSA. Also, don't forget to follow the Midday Report by visiting our 702 and Cape Talk websites. But to our top story now, and it's been yet another interesting 48 hours for the ruling party and the race to elect a new ANC leader. There have been numerous reports and speculation about the future of both Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa and Higher Education Minister Dr. Bledin Zamande. ANC NEC member Becky Cele says he has been told of plans to remove Ramaphosa in order to destabilize the country and cause enough chaos for the December elective conference not to go ahead. What a story this. Now, there's mounting speculation of a cabinet reshuffle, which will see Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma then join the cabinet. Reporter at Eyewitness News, Ziyanda Qobo, spoke to General Becky Cele yesterday, and she joins us now live. Good afternoon, Ziyanda. Great to have you on the Midday Report. Explosive revelations. Just take us to exactly what Becky Cele had to say then.
Afternoon, Ray. Indeed, it was quite a bombshell that was dropped during the KZN Shop Stewards Council. And in the first instance, it's interesting to see the kind of people who were there. We had, the COSATU's Domo Dlamini speaking there, and as well as the SACP's Bledin Zamande, who, of course, has a lot of, speculation around him and whether he's about to be axed. Now, during his message of support on behalf of the ANC, Becky Cele, kind of addressed Bledin Zamande directly, saying, there's a worrying message on his phone that there are plans to remove Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa and then, cause enough chaos in such a way that the elective conference wouldn't go ahead this December, but next December in 2018, and that would mean the status quo would remain. He also then said that there's also seemingly a plan to escalate the political assassinations, which have obviously predominantly been taking place in KZN, and this would also be a part of the chaos that is created in the country. Now, we don't know who sent in this message, how credible it is, whether it's a part of the rumor mill that's been, going over the past couple of days, ever since Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma was announced to be going back to parliament.
Now, these are serious reports. Are the police investigating? Are they looking at this?
We don't know at this stage, Ray. It's unclear. But from the analysts that I've spoken to, they've really, just described it as something that is almost creating hysteria for nothing. Because, as you know, there've also been WhatsApps going around about the possible list of ministers who'd be, sworn into Parliament as a part of this impending cabinet reshuffle. So it doesn't seem like it's the kind of claim that will be taken seriously at this stage, Ray.
Ziyanda, you also spoke to Bledin Zamande about the cabinet reshuffle. What did he actually have to say to you?
He kind of laughed that off, Ray, just saying that it's just media speculation at this stage. He can't comment on, something that hasn't happened, because, of course, there's reports that he'll be axed, and then Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma will take over his higher education portfolio and then announce free education to woo voters, especially the youth vote, and which would obviously then bolster her presidential ambitions. So he wouldn't be drawn on why he believes Dlamini-Zuma, first of all, is heading back to parliament and what he'd do if indeed he is given the chop. But during his address to, the COSATU affiliates yesterday, he said he doesn't care about, these positions you are given positions by the people who vote you in. And so if you're removed, the people themselves will speak. But if he is removed, then it would kind of be a disaster.
Zianda, another story that you covered at the weekend, Makhosi Khoza. Now, she didn't appear for her disciplinary hearing. Take us through exactly what happened.
Ray, I think there was a bit of confusion there because I spoke to Dr. Khoza on Friday ahead of the hearing, and she was adamant that she's meant to appear at 3 p.m. on Sunday, while the KZN ANC said, you know, she has to be there at 9 o'clock. Now, yesterday at 9 o'clock, her legal counsel did appear on time, but she, of course, wasn't there. And according to the KZN ANC, her legal representative said that she didn't come because she'd received new threats as recently as Saturday evening. So she did indicate that she does fear for her life because of the volatility in KwaZulu-Natal at the stage. But the KZN ANC is seemingly upset about this, saying she's known about this hearing for a long time. She should have prepared. And, of course, Khoza saying that she had made an appeal to have the venue for the hearing changed, which the KZN ANC refused. Now, I'd also asked them questions about why they refused to allow her to be given the hearing at a different venue, and the response was that she made the appeal to the provincial secretary, and the reason why she was denied that opportunity is because she wasn't able to present enough evidence to prove that her life is under threat. So that request was dismissed. So now the KZN ANC is saying the confusion is possibly because she was given a pre-trial opportunity on Saturday at 3 p.m. But, you know, she'll still be afforded that opportunity this week. But if she doesn't appear this coming Sunday, they will continue with the disciplinary process, whether she's there or not.
Eyewitness News reporter Zianda Ngobo on the line from Durban. Now, let's stay with this story and events of the past 48 hours. There have also been questions over the future of the tripartite alliance. If SACP leader Dr. Bladen Zamande is removed from his portfolio, the SACP says it will only support a cabinet reshuffle by the president if ministers implicated in the Gupta emails and other corruption scandals are also sacked. Now, on the line is associate editor at Tiso Blackstar Group and also political analyst Ranjeni Munusami. Good afternoon, Ranjeni. Welcome to the Midday Report. Now, reports that Minister Bladen Zamande may be removed from his post. What does this mean for the tripartite alliance and the SACP?
Well, Ray, relations within the alliance is already at an all-time low, so I doubt things could get any worse. But particularly when you look at the SACP's relationship with President Zuma, they've made several calls now for the president to step down. They are amongst the fiercest critics of the president. So I think President Zuma is now beyond caring about what the SACP thinks about him. I think that the state of the alliance is beyond repair. So I don't think that there would be anything holding the president back from executing such a reshuffle to remove SACP members from his cabinet.
So you think President Jacob Zuma would then take the plunge and maybe replace Bladen Zamande and maybe also as well Cyril Ramaphosa?
The problem, Ray, is that we don't know what informs President Zuma's decisions to reshuffle cabinet. As we saw in the March reshuffle, that reshuffle was not in the interest of the ANC and definitely not in the interest of the country. So the president, in effect, willfully sabotages the country in those decisions he makes about cabinet. So, you know, the changes that he is rumored to want to make now is also not in the interest of the state. So it's not as if Cyril Ramaphosa and Zamande are staff performers at the moment, but it speaks about the stability within the ANC and the country. And it seems that the president is not motivated by maintaining stability. Now, the last time we know that the ANC officials said on record that the president made the decisions about the cabinet reshuffle without consulting them and that the decisions were taken elsewhere. And it's seemingly the case now. So we don't know, you know, based on what Bheki Cele is saying, that senior people in the ANC also don't know what is going on. And we can only guess as to what is behind the move and who he will be removing.
I hear what you say, but I mean, how damaging would this be for the ANC if President Jacob Zuma decides, well, you know what, let's just do this thing?
Well, if he does remove Cyril Ramaphosa, I think that it switches the entire race to the ANC December conference into a different mode. I think it's going to get a lot more hostile. You know, I think that the faction that is currently supporting Cyril Ramaphosa will get a lot more aggressive in their campaigning. And I think that, you know, it will be a lot messier in terms of the exchanges, the relationships within the ANC. But also, I think that what you need to bear in mind, Ray, is that Deputy President Ramaphosa's campaign took some severe knocks in the past few weeks, particularly last week, but it's still staying strong. He still has the edge in the race. And I think that is what is angering the other camp and which is what could provoke some unexpected moves, as to disorientate his camp and to sabotage his campaign. I think that he would, you know, if he is edged out of the state, it makes him an ordinary citizen, an ordinary member of the ANC. He doesn't have the kind of resources to go around the security that he has now. So it would disorientate him, but I think it could also backfire on President Zuma and his camp.
Associate editor at the Tiso Black Star Group and also political analyst, Ranjeni Monosamy. Thanks for your time this afternoon on the Midday Report. 21 minutes past 12 o'clock, and there was much fanfare when the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital in Johannesburg was launched just 9 months ago. 1 billion rand in donations saw the launch of the new hospital, which caters for specialized treatment for children. It even has its own in-house radio station, I believe, but the hospital is now reported to be battling. Reports say it's not receiving enough money from government. It wanted 500 million rand a year. On the line is the Minister of Health, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi. Good afternoon, Minister. Welcome to the Midday Report.
Good afternoon, Ray, and good afternoon to the list.
Reports that the hospital minister is receiving 150 million rand and not 500 million rand that's required. Is that correct?
Well, it's not. Ray, I must say, I was quite shocked to learn that there are people who really wish to bring reputational damage to a project started by Madiba. And I must state also, the fact that it was made to appear as headline in three different newspapers to make it widespread, whereas the story is from exactly one source and one person. And the fact that the person asked us questions last week and we responded to them and the answers don't appear there shows that there is some form of campaign. But be that as it may, some of the things there that are being said don't make sense. If you go to the speech of the Minister of Finance, which was read early this year, it says the hospital is giving 600 million rand over the MTF period. I'm sure you are aware that MTF is 3 years. And so there's no government department, unless they wanted to start with Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital, which gets given all the money for the whole MTF period at the same time. So it's true they were given 150 million because that is what they could start with. And there's no hospital of that magnitude that just starts at a high throttle. Yeah. They were saying at full throttle, the hospital might need 150 million. And we did promise. I'm the one who personally gave a promise to the then Deputy Minister of Health during the shortening ceremony where Madiba, Mandela himself wanted a guarantee from government whether we support the hospital. And we said by all means yes, because it is definitely needed by the country. Remember, it's the only second one in the whole country. The first one is Red Cross Children's Hospital, which is also fully funded by the state. Nobody complains about it. Red Cross Children's Hospital in Cape Town. Nobody complains about how it started. In fact, Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital did us a favor because Nelson Mandela agreed that he will raise funds for the infrastructure, which, by the way, was supposed to have been raised by government.
Yeah.
And instead, I'll go out, raise funds from all over the world to build a hospital, and we run it because we need it. Just like we needed Red Cross Children's Hospital, which was built during the apartheid era, and everything was funded by the state, and nobody complained. I don't understand what this complaint is all about.
So, Minister, in other words, there's no problem at the hospital. It's fully functioning, and the finances are on track.
It's not fully functioning because it's just starting, but it's functioning according to plan. Not fully, because when you say fully functioning, you mean every aspect of the hospital is working. They said no, they need to do a dry run. That's why we have to pay the money, yes. They need to make sure, they need to make sure that every equipment is functioning the way they want it to function, all the systems are running well, etc. And they started on a small scale. So what they've done is what is according to schedule, and they were given 150 million for that. Because the 500 million they are talking about, I'm not sure where it came from, because the Minister of Finance said 600 million, but it was over MTF, which is 3 years. And I'm repeating, I've been in government for so many years, I've never seen any government department or entity giving all their money for the MTF. That's not how budgeting works in the state.
Yeah,
so they mention it that you are going to get so much, but they give it every financial year.
Yeah. Look, Minister, it's a wonderful facility. It really is. Do you have any other similar facilities that have been planned?
No, this is the only second one in South Africa after 60 years.
Sure.
In other words, it took us 60 years to put a second children's hospital. It's in the whole continent of Africa. It's only the fourth one for the whole continent. If you consider that United States have got 156 of such hospitals, Canada alone has got about 29. Australia has got about 20.
Sure.
You'll see that as a continent, we are lagging far behind other nations of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Indeed, we are. Minister, when last were you at the hospital?
Oh, no. I was there during the opening.
Okay. That was
ever since I said I'll visit and see us. But I'm every day or almost every week, I speak to Ms. Mukabela, the CEO of Nelson Mandela Children's Fund. I do meet them all the time, and Meg Grasa Michelle, who is the chairperson of the committee. We do meet all the time and do events around the hospital, but physically being inside the wards, I've been there only during the opening, and I've been delaying to go because I didn't get an opportunity, but I really want to go and see. Especially after this report, we would like to go and see, because the dean of the University of Witwatersrand, I just spoke to him an hour ago. He's also very hurt about this report because he doesn't understand what they're all about, you know?
Certainly very interesting. Minister of Health, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, thanks for joining us this afternoon on the Midday Report.
Thank you very much.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
Well, Swane's Mayor Solly Msimanga has launched a hope line in partnership with the non-profit organizations to help those battling with drugs and also substance abuse. It's a call contact center with a rather unique approach. So we thought we'd get them on the Midday Report. And on the line is the spokesperson of the City of Swane's Mayor for the City of Swane's Mayor, Solly Msimanga, Samkelo Mkhubozi. Samkelo, good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report. Tell us more about this call center and what it's got to offer.
Good morning, or afternoon rather. Thanks for having me on the line.
Hi.
The executive mayor, after appreciating and dealing with the scourge of drugs in the capital city, has decided in conjunction with the MMC for Health, Rakhi Deploy, to launch a hope line, which is essentially a contact center where a call center essentially that will allow for some of our specialists in the health sector and in this particular drug space to assist people with the problems that they're having or facing with regards to drugs. This follows the signing of 23 service level agreements with NPOs to assist us with this problem, as the city currently is struggling with the necessary resources to essentially deal with this problem by itself. And we think it's an important partnership to engage with existing non-profits to assist us in fighting this.
Keller, let's just break this down a little bit. So what happens when someone phones in?
Well, essentially, someone phones them and will give them, you know, the sketch out their problem for them, and then they'll be directed to the necessary place. I mean, there are 23 NPOs, and often these people are looking for help but don't know where to approach or where to go and what sort of rehabilitation centres or centres that can assist are close by to them. And this will essentially be a sort of, not necessarily one-stop shop, but a touch point for these people who are looking for assistance in this regard, and they can be directed to the necessary place, and this call centre will facilitate those engagements with the necessary NPOs.
And very importantly, what's the number?
The number is, just give me a second, the number is 012-358-5001.
5001. Lovely. Somkelo Mkhobozi, spokesperson for the mayor. Thanks for joining us on the Midday Report this afternoon.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, Ray.
The Midday Report. Business.
You would have heard it in Eyewitness News. Well, Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba says South Africa is in danger of missing its 2017 growth target of 1.3% due to poor performance of major sectors of the local economy, which will likely restrain tax revenues. Gigaba was speaking at a tax conference this morning where he said the current level of growth is simply insufficient. Not good enough, he said. He says the country cannot be complacent about the 2.5% second quarter growth, which is good news for us. He also says South Africa aims to collect 1.3 trillion rand in taxes during the 2017-2018 financial year that ends in March versus the 1.14 trillion rand collected a year before. In other news, Pietra Diamonds says a parcel of stones from a mine it co-owns in Tanzania has been blocked from export and that officials there are now questioning some personnel. Tanzania's president, John Magufuli, last week ordered a review of a Pietra contract and asked the public officials to resign over the outcome of an urgent investigation into the mining sector. The company says it has not been told the reasons for the latest action. Looking at the markets now, the rand has edged higher today, regaining some of the ground it lost on Friday as traders positioned for yet another rally against a dollar weighed down by political tensions and also Hurricane Irma. The rand has gained about 5% in the past 30 days as political tensions between the US and North Korea simmered, benefiting from South Africa's role as a major exporter of safe haven gold. With no major data out in the session, analysts say the rand looks set to drift in a narrow range, with focus shifting to local politics as the ANC's leadership contest heats up. And you would have heard that on the Midday Report a little bit earlier on. Looking at the markets closely now, the oil share up around 0.5% at 55,955 points a short while ago. The rand is now 12.88 to the dollar, 16.99 to the pound, 15.47 to the euro, gold $1,338.31, and then Brent crude oil is $53.68. More business news with Bruce on The Money Show.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
Some of your tweets and your SMSs. One SMS says, "Hi Ray, he laughs at us. So yes, reshuffling again, then the DA is right to try and get Parley disbanded. Zuptas must go," says that SMS. Another one says, "Hi Stephen, call me Ray. The health minister is not correct. What about the Transvaal Memorial Hospital for Children? He says it was closed." This is Graham. "He says it was closed. Was that because the new one was opening?" Big question mark there. And then on At Ray White essay, Aisha Ranshod says, "At Ray White essay, do not believe the health minister. This project is a white elephant. Folks stopped donating ages ago. If you do know a little bit more about the Nelson Mandela Hospital, please do let me know. SMS on 31702 or 31567. You can also tweet on At Ray White essay.
The Midday Report.
I received a very interesting email from FNB. It reads, "Does paying 100 rand a month extra on your bond really matter?" Well, if you look at the amounts of interest you're paid and the fact that the capital amount seems to stay almost the same with your bond, many wonder what exactly is the point. And I also wondered that. But on the line is FNB Head of Special Projects, Dr. Simpiwe Madikizela. Good afternoon, Doctor. Welcome to the show. So why then does 100 rand matter?
Good afternoon to you, Ray, and to your listeners. Thank you so much for inviting us. Going straight to your question, it's very, very important. I mean, paying as little as 50 rand extra or 100 rand or more, for that matter, it goes a very long way in terms of reducing your interest. So basically, you can be able to even cut the period that you are paying off your bond by a substantial number of years. I mean, take 100 rand, for example. Just by paying 100 rand extra, you can be able to reduce the 20 years to 18 years, 8 months as an example. And you would save almost 50,000 in terms of interest over the period of the bond, which is 240 months. So it really is very, very important because it makes a very big difference, Ray.
Yeah. Do you find, though, that people are opening up an access bond and they put money in 100 rand and 200 rand and then the school fees come along and, well, let's just take that out?
Yes, yeah, it does happen because we do understand that our customers are quite under pressure in terms of being highly indebted. If you look at the stats coming from the NCR, National Credit Regulator, it will tell you that out of 23 million credit active customers in South Africa, this is across all products, almost half of them have got an impaired credit record, meaning that they've got 1 or 2 or 3 months where they're in arrears not paying their account. So people are under pressure. We do understand that. But that is it may. We still encourage that if one can be able to afford to pay a little bit extra, just do that as a discipline. It makes a big difference. You save money for yourself, you save on the interest, and you can reduce the period that you pay your bond. But we do happen know that, I mean, it happens with life that you may need that money. In some cases, they have to dip into it, which is what we call a further advance, re-advance. Re-advance is just taking back that money you've paid extra, as you've mentioned.
Yeah. From your vantage points, are interest rates set to decrease?
Yes, you know, they are set to decrease. We believe there's another interest rate cut that's coming in the not-so-distant future. I mean, we did have the 0.25 basis point cut, which we received a few weeks back. So we believe there's more to come, looking at the picture holistically.
Now, I'm sure with this next question, you'll say yes, of course, but is paying off your bond your best investment or not?
Yeah, look, on this one, I think we need to say that the bond is an asset, an investment, and we do also encourage people can leverage on the investment, on the bond itself. So there's a school of thought that, I mean, if you have the bond, an investment, even leaving just a little bit of money left there, not settle the bond, is actually a good practice because you'll be sitting with a lot of equity on that property. If you were to need money, then you can just lend from the equity that is there. That's one school of thought. But obviously, we encourage people to create wealth and pay off their debts as quickly as they can. I mean, it's interesting that the bond is 20 years, right?
Yeah.
But on average, the attrition rate is actually 7 years. In about 7 years or 7.5 years, people do move on for whatever reason. You must start with a two-bedroom house, which is a new beginner's home. Maybe you don't have the children as yet. Later on with life, the family grows. That two-bedroom house is all of a sudden bigger now. I mean, too small. You want a bigger house. Mm. So you might have to extend that house or sell it and buy a new house, which is bigger. In that way, then you're graduating and the next person is coming into the two-bedroom house and so on. So that's how the market works, basically. So we do encourage people to pay off their bonds as quickly as they can, and even go to a second property if they can, even rent it out to generate income. So there are those school of thoughts, but we encourage people to have wealth creation for obvious reasons.
Dr. Simpiwe Madikizela, fascinating chatting to you on the Midday Report this afternoon. FNB's Head of Special Projects.
SMS us on 31702 or 31567.
It's coming up to 12 minutes to 1 o'clock, and there are concerns that the ongoing fight between metered taxi drivers and Uber may have a rather direct impact on tourism in this country. Tourism Minister Thokozile Khaza has been the latest to condemn the violence. The minister says attacks between the two public transport groups have already affected the tourism industry in the country. Three cars were set on fire during clashes between the operators in Sandton last week, Thursday. Now, the Transport Minister Joe Maswanganyi has met with the drivers at the Gautrain station. Eyewitness News reporter Tando Kobeka is there. Good afternoon, Tando. Great to have you on the Midday Report. What did the minister have to say then?
Good afternoon, Ray. Well, firstly, the transport minister has started on a walkabout early this morning here on the streets of Sandton, which was the scene of those violent clashes between metered taxi drivers and Uber drivers last week. Now, you'd remember that at least three vehicles were torched during last week's Thursday's violence. And the minister, of course, wasn't alone. He was accompanied by acting transport MEC Nandimaya Tulakoza and community safety MEC Zagele Mbosi Malobane.
And they have been speaking and interacting with the e-hailing services drivers to find out, Ray, what exactly their grievances are. Now, the minister told them that firstly, he condemned the violence that happened here last Thursday, saying no matter how aggrieved the drivers are, they should not take the law onto themselves. And he says that over 100 law enforcement officers, which include police, metro police officers, will be deployed to the Sandton area, the Gauteng area, as well as OR Tambo to maintain law and order. And he told them that all taxi drivers will be required to apply for a permit as required by law to operate. He has appealed to Uber to urge its partners to apply for permits as well. And, you know, all the requirements, the required documentation as to operate. And Masonganyi really saying that vehicles which are found not to have these documentations, Ray, will be impounded and smacked with a hefty fine or face imprisonment. I mean, he really came out strong, say, reiterating that, you know, the department won't allow lawlessness on the road.
Tando, at the end, though, it comes down to money. And the one side is making more money than the other side because they're getting more business because they got better rates. Are Uber drivers and metered taxi drivers not talking to each other at least?
Well, Ray, you know, most of the issues that they raised here today, we already know them. They're complaining that the e-hailing service, like you say, is taking business away from them. And it's a known fact that Uber is much cheaper, you know, than metered taxi. And the metered taxi drivers are calling for regulations to ensure that the e-hailing service abides by the same law as them. Now, the Uber drivers that we have spoken to say that they don't feel safe. You know, their lives are being threatened daily. And this, of course, also threatens the lives of, you know, the commuters who use Uber. Most of the drivers I also spoke to are from both the metered and Uber, saying that they want peace, but say it can't be achieved under the current circumstances that they work in. But they did come out to say they are willing to work together. And of course, you know, what the minister was saying, that they need to have the correct documentation to operate. And they agreed that they will abide by this.
Eyewitness News reporter Tando Kubek joining us from Sandton.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
Just some of your SMSs now. One says, hi Ray, according to the Minister of Health, there's only two children's hospitals. What about Tygerberg Children's Hospital, opened by Archbishop Desmond Tutu in 2001? He and Mama Leah, they are the patrons. Thank you, with kind regards. Another SMS is similar, says Ray, the Red Cross War Memorial Children's Hospital was not started by the apartheid government. That's from Ian. And then another one says, what a pity about the Minister of Health. He doesn't know that the Red Cross War Memorial Hospital was actually built by prisoners of war during the Second World War. Very interesting. Keep your SMSs coming on 31702 or 31567.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
The Home Affairs Department has announced a new permit system for documented Zimbabweans in this country. Now, the permit is called the Zimbabwean Exemption Permit. But who does it exactly apply for? On the line is the head of permits at the Department of Home Affairs, Ronnie Morule. Good afternoon, Ronnie. Welcome to the Midday Report. So who exactly then does qualify for such a permit?
Good afternoon, and good afternoon to the listeners. The people who qualify for the Zimbabwe exemption permits are those that were issued with what we call Zimbabwe's special permit, which it's known as a ZSP. So these are the individuals from Zimbabwe that were issued with ZSP that expires at the end of this year, December 31st, 2017. So these permits were issued in 2014. So this is a group of Zimbabweans who qualify to apply for the ZEP.
So what does a person need to do then to qualify for this? Do you need to submit certain documentation?
Yeah, all they need to do is to submit evidence of work for them to qualify, to be issued with a document to allow them to work. They also need to give us evidence of business, if they're running a business, even if it's a low-scale business, as long as the municipality can confirm that they are running a business. And those that are studying at any institution will have to give us a proof of their study, and we will be able to issue them with the Zimbabwe exemption permit.
And it's a really easy process, is it? You just go to your local Home Affairs Department office?
No, it is quite an easy process, but we do it online. They apply through our online system, which is at www.vfsglobal.com. And when they apply online, they make an application, they choose an appointment, and from the 1st of October, they will be able to choose an appointment. But from the 15th of September, they will be able to make an application online, and from the 1st of October, they will be able to make an appointment online. And all they do, they visit the VFS office of their choice. We have a mid-rent office. We have other offices all over the country. So they visit the office of their choice at their own time and go through a seamless process of taking in biometrics, fingerprints, photographs, and everything. The other good thing that we have done as a department is that they don't need to go and apply for a police clearance.
Right.
Because that might take some time. We do a background check. We've got a relationship as government between Home Affairs and the police, where at the background, we are able to link our systems with the police systems, and we are able to check any fingerprints and any criminal records. So it's quite an advanced system that the department has implemented.
So what happens for undocumented Zimbabweans, those who went across the Limpopo River, they are here illegally? Can they say, okay, help me, I need to maybe come online, I'd like to join, I'd like to get the special permit?
No, we do not accept new applicants. Those that come from across Zimbabwe have to come in legally. And those that did not come in legally, we will have to implement the Immigration Act, unfortunately. We do not open this special dispensation to those who come in and go through our borders illegally. We discourage that, and therefore we will not allow them to apply for the Zimbabwe special permit.
So there's no way that somebody can say, all right, you've caught me, I am here illegally, please help me out, I'd like to get my legal paperwork done.
No, they need to legalize their stay. They need to come to South Africa legally. They cannot come to South Africa illegally, and when you are found, you then say you want to legalize your stay. You've got to come in legally. If you've got challenges in terms of getting relevant documentation, we've got processes in place where we are able to assist you and see how we can give you the kind of visa that will allow you to remain in the country. And surely between ourselves and Zimbabwe, we have a visa waiver. There is no need for Zimbabweans to come to the country illegally because they've got a visa waiver. They enjoy coming to the country for 90 days without any visa. Mm. So we believe that through the visa waiver, we are able to regulate movement of persons between the two countries.
Sounds interesting. Head of permits at the Home Affairs Department, Ronnie Marule. Thanks for your time this afternoon on the Midday Report. And we are out of time because it is 1 o'clock.